Welcome to Love's Tender Flame. Tales of Romance. I'm Ardell. Reading Come Out of the Kitchen by Alice Dewar Miller. Chapter 11. They sat down at table, and as Crane looked at his guests, he had little hope that even Leffert's cheerful facility could save the situation. Circumstances would be too much against him. Even the poet himself could hardly be at his best, having just arrived in the hope of dining with his lady love, to find that she had been spirited away by an irate mother. This in itself was enough to put a pall on most men, yet of the three guests, Leffert seemed by far the most hopeful. Tucker was already sullen, and getting more sullen every moment. Crane knew the signs of his lawyer's bearing, the irritable eye that would meet no one's directly, the tapping fingers, the lips compressed but moving. Tucker was one of those people, cursed by anger after the event. His nature, slow-moving or over-controlled, bore him past the real moment of offense without explosion. But with the crisis over, his resentment began to gain in strength and to grow more bitter as the opportunity for action receded more and more into the past. Crane knew now that Tucker was reviewing every phrase that had passed between them, every injury, real or fancied, that he had ever received at Crane's hands. These he was summoning like a sort of phantom army to fight on his side. No, Tucker was not a guest from whom any host could expect much genial interchange that evening. Reed, on the other hand, was too unconscious. Placid, good-natured, confident in his own powers to arrange any little domestic difficulties that might have arisen, he sat down, unfolded his napkin, and turned to Lefferts to answer to the inquiry about real estate, which Lefferts had just tactfully addressed to him. "The great charm of this section of the country," he was saying, "is that from the time of its earliest settlement, it has been in the hands of a small group of..." At this instant, Jane Ellen entered with the soup. Reed, who had expected to see Smithfield, stopped short and stared at her with an astonishment he did not even attempt to disguise. Lefferts, following the direction of his eyes and seeing Jane Ellen for the first time, mistook the subject of Reed's surprise. "Oh," he said as the girl left the room, "is this the face that launched 1,000 ships?" Tucker, who was perhaps not as familiar with the Elizabethan dramatist as he should have been, replied shortly that this was the cook. "A very beautiful little person," said Lefferts, imagining, poor fellow, that he was now on safe ground. "I own," said Tucker, "that I've never been able to take much interest and the personal appearance of servants." "You sometimes behave as if you did, Tuck," remarked his host. "If you were interested in beauty," observed Lefferts, "I don't see how you can eliminate any of its manifestations, particularly according to the social classes. Such a preoccupation with beauty strikes me as decadent," answered Tucker crossly. "Indeed, how delightful," Lefferts replied. "What exactly is your definition of decadent?" Now, in Tucker's vocabulary, the word decadent was a hate word. It signified nothing definite except that he disliked the person to whose opinions he applied it. He had several others of the same sort: hysterical, half-baked, and subversive of the Constitution, being those most often in use. This being so, he really couldn't define the word, and so he pretended not to hear and occupied himself flicking an imaginary crumb from the satin lapel of his coat. Lefferts, who had no wish to be disagreeable, did not repeat the question, but contented himself by observing that he had never tasted such delicious soup. Reed shook his head in an ecstasy that seemed to transcend words. Only Tucker scowled. As Jane Ellen entered at this moment to take away the soup plates, Crane, who was growing reckless, decided to let her share the compliment. "The gentleman enjoyed the soup, Jane Ellen," he said. "At least Mr. Leffords and Mr. Reed did. But Mr. Tucker has not committed himself. Did you enjoy the soup, Tuck?" Tucker rapped with his middle finger. "I care very little for my food," he answered. "Well," said Crane, "I've heard of hating the sin and loving the sinner. I suppose it is possible to hate the cooking and..." He paused. "I did not say I hated the cooking," answered Tucker. "I only say I am not interested in talking about it all the time." "All right," said Burton, "we'll talk about something else, and you shall have first choice of a topic, Tuck."
"One moment before we begin," exclaimed Reed. "I must ask, where's Smithfield?"
Crane turned to him.
"Smithfield," he said, "in common with my two guests, the housemaid Lily and the boy Brindlebury, have all left, or been ejected from my house within the last 24 hours.
"You mean," gasped Reed, "that you and Mr. Tucker and the cook are alone in the house?"
"I regret to say that Mr. Tucker also leaves me this evening."
But,
began Reed in a protest too earnest to find words on the instant.
"We won't discuss the matter now," said Crane. "I have several things to talk over with you, Mr. Reed, after dinner. In the meantime," he added, looking around on the dreary faces of all but Lefferts, "let us enjoy ourselves."
"Certainly, by all means," agreed Reed. "But I would just like to ask you, Mr. Crane, you can't mean...
You don't intend, you don't contemplate."
"Oh, I won't trouble you with my immediate plans," said Crane, and added, turning to Lefferts, "My experience is that no one is really interested in anyone else's plans, their daily routine, I mean, and small domestic complications."
"Oh, come, I don't know about that," answered Lefferts, on whom the situation was beginning vaguely to dawn. "Mr. Reed struck me as being very genuinely interested in your intentions. You are genuinely interested, aren't you, Mr. Reed?"
Reed was interested beyond the point of being able to suspect malice.
"Yes, yes," he said eagerly. "I am, genuinely, sincerely. You see, I understand what would be said in a community like this, what would be thought. Oh, you get my idea."
"I own I don't," answered Burton suavely, "but I will say this much, that in deciding my conduct, I have usually considered my own opinion rather than that of others."
"Of course, exactly, I do myself," said Reed, "but in this case, I really think you would agree with me if I could make myself clear."
"Doubtless, doubtless," answered Crane, and seeing that Jane Ellen was again in the room, he went on. "What exactly is it that we are talking about? What is it that you fear?"
Reed cast an agonized look at the cook and remained speechless. But Tucker, with more experience in the befogging properties of language, rushed to his assistance.
"It's perfectly clear what he means," he said. "Mr. Reed's idea is that in a small community like this, the conduct of every individual is watched, scrutinized, and discussed, however humble a sphere he or she may occupy, and that if any young woman should find herself in a position which has been considered a compromising one by every author and dramatist in the language, she would not be saved from the inevitable criticism that would follow by the mere fact that..."
But here, something very unfortunate happened. The lip of the ice water pitcher, which Jane Ellen was approaching, took Tucker's glass, suddenly touched his shoulder, and a small quantity of the chilling liquid trickled between his collar and his neck. It was not enough
to be called a stream, and yet it was distinctly more than a drop. It was sufficient to cut short his sentence. "Oh, sir, I'm so sorry," she cried, and she added with a sort of wail, looking at Crane, "You see how it is, sir. I'm not used to waiting on table."
"I think she waits admirably," murmured Lefferts aside to his host.
"Extremely competent, I call it," said Crane clearly. "Don't give it another thought, Jane Ellen, see?" he added, glancing at Tucker's face, which was distorted with anger. "Mr. Tucker has forgotten it already."
"Oh, sir, how kind you are to me," cried the cook, and ran hastily into the pantry, from which a sound which might have been a cough was instantly heard.
"Yours is a strange but delightful home, Crane," observed Lefferts. "I don't really recall ever having experienced anything quite like it."
"You refer, I fancy," replied Crane, "to the simple peace, the assured confidence that something unexpected is going to happen within the next 10 seconds.
Tucker and Reed, both absorbed in their private wrongs, were for an instant like deaf men, but the latter, having now dried his neck and as much of his collar as was possible, showed signs of coming too, so that Crane included both in the conversation.
"Lefferts and I were speaking," he said, slightly raising his voice, "of the peculiar atmosphere that makes for the enjoyment of a home. What, Mr. Reed, do you think is most essential?"
"Just one moment, Mr. Crane," said Reed. "I want to say a word more of that other subject we were speaking of."
Crane's seat allowed him to see the pantry door before anyone else could. On it his eyes were fixed as he answered thoughtfully.
"Our last subject now, let me see, what was that?"
"It was the question of the propriety of..."
"Fish, sir," said a gentle voice in Reed's ear. He groaned and helped himself largely and in silence.
Lefferts, who was really kind-hearted, pitied his distress and decided to change the topic.
"What a fine old house this is," he said, glancing around the high-ceilinged room. "Who does it belong to?"
"It belongs," answered Tucker, "to a family named Reveille, a family who held a highly honored position in the history of our country, until they took the wrong side in war."
"In this part of the country, sir," cried Reed, "we are not accustomed to thinking it the wrong side."
Tucker bowed slightly.
"I believe that I am voicing the verdict of history and time," he answered.
It was in remorse, perhaps, for having stirred up this new subject of dispute, that Lefferts now went on rapidly, too rapidly to feel his way.
"Well, this present generation seems to be an amusing lot. Elliot was telling me about them last night. He says one of the girls is a perfect beauty. And now, what was her name? Such a pretty one. Oh, yes," he added, slightly raising his voice as his memory gave it to him. "Claudia."
"What?" said the cook.
"Nobody spoke to you, Jane Ellen," said Crane, but his eyes remained fixed on her long and meditatively as she handed the sauce for the fish.
Lefferts continued.
"Elliot said she was a most indiscriminating fascinator, engaged to 3 men last summer, to his knowledge. Our northern girls are infants compared."
Reed suddenly sprang up from the table.
"I'd be obliged, sir," he said, "if you'd tell Mr. Elliot, with my compliments, that story of his is untrue, and if he doesn't know it, he ought to. I don't blame you, sir, stranger, for repeating all you hear about one of the loveliest young ladies in the country, but I do blame him."
At this, the cook approached him and said with a stern civility, "Do sit down and eat your fish, sir, before it gets cold." They exchanged a long and bitter glance, but Reed sat down.
"I'm sure you'll believe," said Lefferts, "that I'm sorry to have said anything I ought not to. particularly about any friend of yours, Mr. Reed, but the truth is, I thought of it only as being immensely to the credit of the young lady, in a neighborhood which must be, if you'll forgive me saying, rather dull, if you're not fond of hunting.
The point is not whether it is to her credit or not, returned Reed, who was by no means placated.
The point is that it is not true.
Probably not, Lefferts agreed, only, he added after a second's thought, I don't see how anyone can say that except the young lady herself.
Miss Claudia Reveille, answered Reed, is one of the most respected and admired young ladies in the state. I may say in the whole South. I have known her and her family since she was a child, and I should have been informed if anything of the kind had taken place.
As he said this, the glance that the cook cast at him was indescribable. It was mingled pity and wonder, as much as to say, what hope is there after all for a man who can talk like that?
Undoubtedly you're right, Mr. Reed, said Lefferts, and yet I have never heard of a girl's announcing more than one engagement at a time, although it has come within my experience to know.
But after all, why not, said Crane. Perhaps that will be the coming fashion. We shall in future get letters from our friends which will begin, I want you to know of the three happinesses that have come into my life. I am engaged to John Jones, Peter Smith, and Paul Robinson, and I feel almost sure that one of these three, early next June.
Seeing that Reed was growing really angry, Lefferts hastened to interrupt his host.
I think you might tell us, Mr. Reed, he said, what the great beauty of the county looks like.
I can't think that this is the time or place for retailing the charms of a young lady as if it were a slave market, answered Reed. And it seemed to Crane that the cook who had come to change the plates looked a little bit disappointed.
No, not as if it were a slave market, said Lefferts, because of course it isn't.
I can see no reason, Reed, said Crane, why you shouldn't give us a hint as to whether Miss Reveille is blonde or brunette, tall or short.
Perhaps I see reasons that you do not, sir, answered the wretched real estate man.
Well, said Crane, I tell you what, Jane Ellen must have seen her often.
Jane Ellen, he added, you've seen Miss Reveille, what does she look like?
Jane Ellen advanced into the room thoughtfully.
Well, sir, she said, it isn't for me to criticize my superiors, nor to say a word against a young lady who Mr. Reed admires so much. But I have my own reasons, sir, for thinking that there was more in those stories of her engagement than perhaps Mr. Reed himself knows. Servants hear a good deal, you know, sir, and they do say that Miss Reveille...
Claudia! Burst from Reed.
Miss Claudia Reveille, I should say, the cook corrected herself. Well, sir, as for looks, let me see. She's a tall, commanding-looking lady.
With flashing black eyes? Asked Crane.
And masses of blue-black hair.
A noble brow.
A mouth too large for perfect beauty.
A queenly bearing.
An irresistible dignity of manner.
Jane Ellen, said Crane, I feel almost as if Miss Claudia Reveille were standing before me.
Oh, indeed, sir, if she were, it's you who would be standing, said the cook.
For my part, said Crane, turning again to the table, I had imagined her to myself as quite different. I had supposed her small, soft-eyed, with tiny hands and feet, and a mouth. He was looking at Jane Ellen's mouth, as if that might give him an inspiration when Reed interrupted.
"I regret to say, Mr. Crane," he said, "that if this conversation continues to deal disrespectfully
with the appearance of a young lady for whom...
Disrespectfully? Cried Crane. I assure you, I had no such intention. I leave it to you, Jane Ellen, whether anything disrespectful was said about this young lady.
It did not seem so to me, sir, answered the cook with her gentlest manner. But, she added, glancing humbly at Reed, of course it would never do for a servant like me to be setting up my opinion on such a matter against a gentleman like Mr. Reed.
What I mean is, if Miss Reveille were here, do you think she would object to anything we have said?
Indeed, I'm sure. She would actually have enjoyed it, sir.
Well, then she ought not, shouted Reed sternly. Jane Ellen shook her head sadly.
Ah, sir, she said, young ladies like Miss Reveille don't always do what they ought to, if report speaks true.
May I ask, without impertinence, Burton, said Tucker at this point, whether it is your intention to give us nothing whatsoever to drink with our dinner?
No, certainly not, cried Crane. Jane Ellen, why haven't you served the champagne?
The reason for this omission was presently only too clear. Jane Ellen had not the faintest idea of how to open the bottle. Crane, listening with one ear to his guest, watched her wrestling with it in a corner, holding it as if it were a venomous reptile. For my part, Tucker was saying, I have a great deal of sympathy with the stand Mr. Reed has taken. Any discussion of a woman behind her back runs at least the risk. Suddenly Crane shouted, Look out! Don't do that! He was speaking not to Tucker, but to the cook. His warning, however, came too late. There was the sound of breaking glass, and a deep cherry-colored stain dyed the napkin in Jane Ellen's hand. All four chairs were pushed back. All four men sprang to her side. Let me see your hand. Is it badly cut? An artery runs near there. Is there any glass in it? They crowded around her, nor did any one of them seem to be averse to taking the case entirely into his own control.
There are antiseptics and bandages upstairs, said Crane.
Better let me wash it at the tap in the pantry, urged Reed.
Does it hurt horribly? Asked Lefferts.
Tucker, putting down his glasses, observed, I have had some experience in surgery, and if you will let me examine the wound by a good light.
Oh, gentlemen, said Jane Ellen, this is absurd. It's nothing but a scratch. Now do sit down and finish your dinner, and let me get through my work.
As the injury did not, after a closer observation, seem to be serious, the four men obeyed, but they did so in silence. Not even Lefferts and Crane could banter any more. Tucker had never made any pretense of recovering his temper, and Reed seemed to be revolving thoughts of deep import. As they rose from the table, Crane touched the arm of Reed. Come into the office, will you? I have something I want to say to you.
And I to you, said Reed with feeling.
Join me next time for another romantic chapter of Come Out of the Kitchen by Alice Dewar Miller here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.